and welcome to episode 60 of Popcorn Optional, a weekly movies podcast where we talk all things movies, and this week we're reviewing the Sundance Film Festival hit, Sorry to Bother You, the directorial debut from rapper and activist Boots Riley, starring Lakeith Stanfield, Tessa Thompson, and a bunch of other talented people. But first, we have some quick news and trailers to get to. We will be doing another round of hot takes, movie hot takes, where we throw out some hot takes. Because we're
not hot ones, which is a much better idea.
Yeah, no, we do movie hot ones where we eat. I don't know where I'm going with this. Are they going to try and make us? Nope. All right, whatever. And then we're going to end with our content of the week. My name is Cameron Slanina, and I'm joined by my co-hosts Jake Brown and Trevor Allison.
Hello.
Hello, coming to you live from the road, so sorry about the audio.
That's okay. I want you guys to know that Trevor is a trooper, and while he is out on the road for a business trip, he still saw the movie.
You gotta want
Lynch.
It.
Legend.
Lynch.
Legend.
All right, well, real quickly, we have a couple casting movie updates type things. Denis Villeneuve is directing two Dune movies, Dune Part 1 and Part 2. And the lead is Timothy Chalamet. So good news all around, right, everybody?
Yeah, I mean, I have very little familiarity with Dune. I have not seen the film or read the book. I know that it's a sci-fi classic as far as the book. But yeah, I mean, you could tell me Denis Villeneuve was directing literally anything. Like, Denis Villeneuve directs Glass of Water on the Counter. I'm there.
Definition of an honorable mensch.
So it doesn't even... I mean, Chalamet is great. Villeneuve is great. Let's get some sci-fi going.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I tried to read Dune, and for some reason, I just didn't. I, like, read the first few chapters. It was, like, an Amazon sample for the Kindle or whatever. Don't judge me. But, yeah, I just couldn't finish it. But it seems to be an interesting world. I mean, people love it. I mean, and Denis Villeneuve and Timothy Chalamet. Gosh, those are hard names to say back to back.
French names.
They're, like, two of the best.
We are not French.
No, definitely not. We're American. They are definitely, like, two of the best working. So I'm super down.
And then next up is... Zombieland 2 is apparently happening with the original cast. Emma Stone, Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson, Abigail Breslin. I was a big fan of the first one. I thought it was a pretty fun little zombie flick, but I don't know if they'll be able to recapture that magic, because so much of what made that movie was kind of like the shock of it all. So are you guys excited for Zombieland 2? Like, is this just kind of a, like, meh, we'll see what happens.
I think for me, part of the, like, fun of Zombieland 1 was the, like, anonymity of the leads. Like, no one really knew who Jesse Eisenberg or Emma Stone were at that moment. And so it was kind of fun of, like, whoa, this movie's just kind of out of nowhere. Yeah. But now they're both, like, two of the biggest stars in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it also is kind of like Incredibles. Like, this is way too late. This should have happened a long time ago. But I think Zombieland is really fun, so I'm down to go back into that universe.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Zombieland was one of the most surprisingly enjoyable movies I've ever seen. I didn't think it was going to be good, and I really enjoyed it. It kind of nails the tongue-in-cheek, self-aware nature of a good zombie film.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think, I mean... they've got the gang back together. Ruben Fleischer is directing it, so I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm not sure it needs to exist, but I'm definitely excited to see it.
Moving on to trailers, Mary, Queen of Scots came out this week, the trailer starring Margot Robbie and Saoirse Ronan. And if you had described to me this movie, I would say I have zero interest in seeing this. But based on the trailer...
This movie is Oscar noms for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Throw out the noms.
And this is like the Braveheart of our generation.
Yeah.
That's what this looks like. It looks so
Man.
Good.
Yeah.
Saoirse Ronan might be the best actress on earth. It's not Meryl Streep.
Ooh.
And
hot take, Trevor.
Save that for hot takes.
Wait. Back that up. Don't run that in here. Jake, edit that out.
So this is one of those movies that it looks to have the right balance of like epicness, heartfelt moment. Like if this thing sticks the landing, Jake, you're right. It's Braveheart. And that's a pretty classic film.
And if Margot Robbie nails this, which it looks like she does, I think that we can declare her one of those people that can do literally anything.
You think so? Yeah.
The contrast in her roles is remarkable.
But you also with that have to take into account like, well, I guess she is like, I'm trying to think of like the bad things that she's in. Like she's not great in Focus. I guess she is good in Suicide Squad. She's one of the few enjoyable pieces of that movie. Next to the plot.
She makes Tanya Harding bizarrely empathetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's great.
She's one of those people that in this role specifically, I think could get an Oscar because part of the complaint with like Leonardo DiCaprio and why it took him so long to get an Oscar is he always played like the cool guy, you know, like he was always playing roles that were just like basically himself.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Margot Robbie shows range, not only in her performances, but also her, like role choices.
Right.
She's willing to. She is a beautiful blonde, blue-eyed actress, but she is always willing to like make herself look worse to serve the role, and that's something that like the Academy is weirdly obsessed with. So,
is beautiful people making themselves look ugly? That's true.
I.e., Charlize Theron in Monster.
Yeah, they are weirdly obsessed with that. So, could get her an Oscar.
Yeah. So we'll be keeping an eye out for that one. That's it's an interesting looking film that could do a lot of damage come Oscar season. That's got to be a front runner. It's coming out December 7th in the United States. So prime spot. All right. We're halfway through the year. And, you know, oddly enough, I was looking back through the past couple of reviews that we had done, and I was like, man, nothing has really stuck out. And so I quickly just kind of want to, I'm curious to ask you guys, what's your favorite movie of 2018 so far?
Okay. So for me, it's A Tie, which I know is like a huge cop out, but I'm going to go with A Quiet Place and Annihilation. I love both of these movies so much for such different reasons. I would highly recommend listening to our reviews on those. I think for me, if it was like, what film do you want to watch right now again? I would pick A Quiet Place just because it's, I think it's a more enjoyable viewing experience. But if it was like, hey, what movie do you want to watch and like have your brain melt? I would pick Annihilation, obviously. So yeah, those are my two top films.
So I have not seen A Quiet Place. That kind of colors my, what was that?
I can't believe you haven't seen it still.
Yeah, so I've not seen A Quiet Place. We'll see it as soon as I can. That being said, it's Annihilation and it's not even close. I've seen like maybe three like good movies this year, and Annihilation is a truly great film. I feel like I talk about it on every single podcast that we do. Just because everything that I watch this year, I view in the context of now I've seen Annihilation, so I think differently about what movies can be and are. And this movie is just, it's just on a different level. It's just something completely different. What Alex Garland does visually, narratively, sonically, I think this movie has created a sound trend in movies that we're going to hear for years. I think that we're going to hear that because it just works so well. The production design and set decoration, while sparse, are incredible. The visual effects are perfect. And it leaves you, it's a truly great work of art in that every time you consume it and every person that consumes it receives something different from it while being equally legitimate in their experience. And I think that's as much as we can possibly ask from this medium. And I will end my elitist rant now.
Yeah, so I'm with you guys. I mean, just to echo what you guys have said, I think A Quiet Place is my favorite film of the year so far. Annihilation may be the best film I've seen this year so far, but I also don't want to forget about Black Panther. I watched that again this past week, and I remember the first time that I watched it, I think I gave it like an A, and then when we did our MCU ranking, it was like fifth. But man, that movie on second viewing, it just kills. It's incredible. I mean, it is just perfectly paced, perfectly acted. It's got a great score. It's got great acting. It's just everything about it works. And I that's a film that kind of sparked this idea. I'm like, man, there have been some good movies that have come out this year. When I just think about, you know, specifically those three films, the Annihilation, A Quiet Place, and Black Panther, that's three pretty good films to have come out already so far this year.
I'm going to throw my quick plug for Paddington 2 in here. You guys have got to see Paddington 2. It's just a complete delight.
You know, Trevor, I'll make you a deal. I'll watch Paddington 2 when you watch A Quiet Place.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll text you as soon as I do it, and we can...
Okay, it's available to stream now.
Okay, we'll compare notes. As soon as I get back home, because my wife wants to see it too. As soon as I get back home, okay, I'll watch A Quiet Place, and then you can watch Paddington.
Yeah, it's on my list. Alrighty. Let's go ahead and get to our movie hot takes. We went over this a little bit last time. If you guys want a refresher, I'll quickly give you one. A hot take is, wow, I sounded so weird when I just, a hot take. So a hot take is something that's normally, it's like a shallow, somewhat like outlandish and hyperbolic thought that goes against what the pop culture may believe as true or accept as like a popular belief. Like it would be as if somebody said, Daniel Day-Lewis is one of the worst actors working nowadays. There's no depth to it. You're not giving reasoning behind it. You're just making a statement that goes against what's widely believed to be true. So we're each going to give two hot takes, give our, we'll just kind of rotate. And then at the end, we'll tell you guys which take we think is the hottest. And then, after that, we will put it up against the hot take from last time, which the winning hot take from our first time that we did this was, with the exception of the first scene, Up is the worst Pixar movie. And that was made by Jake.
Cheers.
I should say that in order for you guys to deliver these, they should be somewhat close to a belief. You may not fully believe it, but it's...
Oh, I believe these. I believe these hot takes. I'm not just saying things to say things.
I believe both of mine. I'm just saying. I just want to put that out there, just so everybody knows. Okay.
Thank you.
These are truths. They're hot truths.
They're hot truths. Yeah. Hot truths. There we go. Put it on the grill. Deliver it to the audience. All right.
Oh my God. Off the rails.
Off the rails. All right, Jake, what is your first hot take?
Okay. I've been known to exaggerate in my life, as my wife would tell you, but I do believe these things, even though they are mild exaggerations. And my first hot take is that I believe that anybody could have made The Matrix in that time, and it still would have been as successful as it was.
Okay, do you mean anyone...
So what you're basically saying is that the Wachowskis have no input on what The Matrix is.
So, yeah. So I need... So are you talking about the film or like writing the story, coming up with the, with
I'm saying,
the story?
I'm saying a bit of both. Okay. I think that idea I know is loosely based on a comic book, but I don't think there's anything special about The Matrix in terms of a story. I think it was very prevalent in the culture. And then also, I don't think that the Wachowskis did anything incredibly original in The Matrix, except for like bullet time, which was already kind of an effect that was happening, you know, in that moment. They just kind of like perfected it. I just, I think The Matrix is great. I just don't think it's unique in the ways that a lot of people like fawn over it.
Okay. I can kind of accept some of this. I think The Matrix is great also, but I think that it owes a big debt to things that came before it, and it's usually talked about as being a singular, unique work.
Yes, absolutely.
And the Wachowskis have had some bad scripts made into movies because of how good The Matrix is.
Yes.
So I think you're a little harsh, but I don't think you're completely off base.
It's called hot takes. Of course it's a little harsh.
It's not meant to be nice, Trevor.
Right.
It's not like cuddly teddy bear takes.
Ooh.
The Wachowskis always have my respect for trying to make a Cloud Atlas movie. Even though it wasn't
that's
that
the
good.
Impossible film to make. While I think you are While I agree with your hot take, I don't think it's that hot of a take because I think that it's a pretty widely believed thing now that people have seen more of what the Wachowskis have done.
Okay.
Okay.
So, with the rest of the Matrix
universe.
Give me the
Scoville
scale.
The rest of the Matrix is
speaking my language.
Yeah. So I'm looking up peppers here. I'd give you a cayenne. You're about 10,000.
Okay.
You're about 10,000 SKU.
All right. I can work with that. That's like a 33% for everybody out there that doesn't know the Scoville scale off the top of their head.
Which is everybody out there.
If you just go to the Wikipedia page for Scoville, that's where I'm getting my
exactly
rankings.
Exactly where I am right now, too.
So, Trevor, what is your first hot take?
My first hot take is directly related to the film we're reviewing, and it's that Armie Hammer has a better voice than John Hamm.
I think that's a very good take. I wish you had made it a little bit hotter. Because I don't even know if I would put John Hamm... Like, I wish you'd have said, like, a better voice than Morgan Freeman. Because I think Morgan Freeman's widely regarded as, like, the best voice.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's John Hamm. Maybe I don't have a good feel. But I seems like to me that John Hamm's voice is a pretty significant pop culture thing.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. Trevor, I'm going to say... It's not hot because it's right. And I just never thought of it before. So on the Scoville scale, I think I'd give that like a sriracha, whatever that is of like the first time you have sriracha, there's this hype and then you have it and you're like, oh, hey, what's up? Didn't expect that. That's delicious. That's how Armie Hammer's voice is for me.
Nice. Just a nice tasty flavor. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I agree with you. I just don't think it's
okay.
A super hot take.
Man, I need to get in touch with the people more, I guess.
Yeah, you need to get the angst out, Trevor. You're such a nice guy. You got to get the anger. Get the anger out there. Like, you're frustrated about Avatar not getting the respect it deserves.
I am so frustrated.
All right. Here's my first hot take. Iron Man, the film, the first one that came out in 2008, has done more damage to the film industry than any other film in the history of the film industry.
Ooh.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, so that's not that hot of a take for me.
Gosh darn it.
Wait, hold on. When did Batman Begins come out?
Oh,
Batman Begins came out in 2004 or 2006?
Six, yeah, 2006.
2006.
Okay, and when did the film come out? 2008? I would say Batman Begins has done more damage than Iron Man has.
Here's my reasoning, is that Batman Begins wasn't setting up a universe. Iron Man has that post-credit scene where it's like, that's what everybody's achieving now, putting the cart before the horse and trying to make... This universe.
I agree, but I think without Batman Begins, Iron Man doesn't happen.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's a pretty clear line that kind of starts with Spider-Man 2 that rolls into Batman Begins, which those two things combined make the MCU possible.
Yeah.
But I do. It's as weird as it is to think about it. I've never processed this before. I do agree with the premise that the great comic book movie has been bad overall for cinema, because I don't think without the great comic book movie, we get five Transformers movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't get I don't know, continuous Dwayne the Rock Johnson blows up, climbs something, shoots something movies. I think those kind of things are all related. We don't get the Mummy starring Tom Cruise for some reason.
Hit me with a pepper. Hit me with a pepper.
I'm gonna roll this one with like it's like a jalapeno. Like it's like kind of warm, but still a little bit tasty.
But it's not hot at all.
I'd put you in the cayenne to habanero thing because I think so many people's basis of Hollywood these days is the MCU, and they're obsessed with it, and that's like what they think of in terms of what cinema is, which is sad, but it's where we are. And so I think most people would find that to be a cayenne to habanero.
Okay, I'll take that. All right, Jake, round two. Hit us with your second hot take of the night.
All right. Let's see, how spicy do we want to be?
I want as bad as
yeah. Give me the hottest thing you got. We've been kind of bland.
Carolina
so far.
Reaper, okay. That mixed with a dragon's breath.
I'll be honest. I kind of forgot we were doing hot takes, so I didn't have time to stew on the hotness.
Okay.
But I got one that I think might be controversial. And it's that Pirates of the Caribbean 1 might be Disney's best movie in the last 50 years.
Woo! Ooh. Ah! Does that? I'm guessing you're saying not counting Pixar.
Yeah.
Are you talking
Pixar
live action Disney?
No, Pixar.
If you're counting Pixar, this is a Carolina Reaper take.
No, I'm not counting Pixar, and I am including animated Disney films.
Okay.
Oh!
This is
Moana?
Not, it's not quite Carolina Reaper, but this is a chocolate habanero for me. This is a pretty hot take. This is
okay.
This is hard for me to handle. Did you say 50 years?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
50 years. I'm trying to go back okay. to like
I could maybe give you top 10. I could maybe give you top 10, but no. No, no, no.
I said it might be the best.
No. The Lion King. It's over. It's not the best.
He said might, Trevor. Gosh darn, no. Man.
I'm telling you, this is a pretty hot take.
Learn your syntax, bro.
All right, sorry, I'm talking too much.
No, you're good. I think this is hot. This is real hot, real warm. This is Texas this past week. For all my Texans out there.
Oh my God, it is miserable in Texas this week.
Yeah. I'm visiting the desert and it's cooler here.
Oh man, the last 50 years. Dude, you're putting it up against some real bangers.
is it a banger?
Dang.
But to be real, Disney had like a 25 year dry spell between 101 Dalmatians and Little Mermaid. The really only good thing there is Robin Hood in between.
Oh, man. But there's like, oh, man.
But the 90s, Disney owned the 90s.
Yeah, like late 80s, they really started to kind of ramp it up. Dang, man, I'm going to, that's in between a Reaper and a chocolate habanero.
Okay, that's pretty good.
It's upper level. That's pretty hot.
We getting spicy.
Do you believe that?
I love the first Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, it's great. I agree that it's great.
I really do think it is one of Disney's best films. I love it.
Okay. All right, Trevor, round two.
Okay. Dang, I feel inadequate now. My second hot take is that Saoirse Ronan is the best actress alive.
What? Alive?
Alive.
Alive?
Yep.
The best actress alive.
At this moment. Not body of work, not history, not accomplishments. At this moment, acting talent, ability, right now.
Oh, man.
I mean, that's hot, but how on base is it? Man, that's hot. That's pretty hot.
What are you basing this on? Explain.
Not on her upcoming Little Women film.
What? It's directed by Greta Gerwig.
It's Little Women. It's been done so many times. But I do love Greta Gerwig. Okay. So Saoirse Ronan has not always been in great movies, but she always does a great job. She has an incredibly wide range of roles that she's played. I thought as Lady Bird, I thought she was just perfect. I thought absolutely astounding. I haven't seen all of her movies, but what I have seen, I think she's always great. I think she's just on a different level, especially than the actresses that are her age. She's only 24, and she's accomplished a lot of things, and I think she can do anything.
So let me say this: if you like, you had a movie that you're like, this is the Saoirse Ronan film that I'm going to show people to put them over the edge.
I think it's Lady Bird, followed by Atonement.
So I'll be honest, I don't have a ton of experience with her. I still have yet to see Lady Bird. I don't know why. I just haven't. I'm sorry, everybody. I definitely think that she might be the best actress like under 35 to 40 working right now. But I mean, best actress alive? Like,
it's a hot take.
Meryl Streep is still working. No, that is a hot take. I appreciate
Emma,
the hotness.
Emma Stone, like, oh my gosh, there's just so many people that come to mind that I'm like,
you know, I'm gonna say that's probably like, in terms of the hotness of the take, that's like Carolina Reaper, just because it's wrong. So
we're just gonna start spouting like the wrongest thing. Look, Last Jedi, worst film of all time.
You know, some people would be all over what you
just
said.
There are people that agree with that. Dang it. Okay, hold on.
All right, Cameron.
I would say she's the best actress working today that's under 25.
That's not an impressive list.
Well, I mean, but gosh,
she's at the top of it.
She's at the top. Okay. I think you're wrong, but I think it's hot. I think it's
give us a pepper.
It's a Reaper. I'll give it to you.
Oh dang!
It's a Reaper.
All right, Cam.
So
I do actually like 85% believe that, for the record.
That's good. That's a good amount.
Okay, I'm gonna be real honest with you. That Iron Man one, I thought was gonna be off the charts. I was like, this is fire. This is just straight up eating lava, like. And then after getting a cayenne pepper, you know, 30,000, I was taken down a couple pegs. And I was planning to start off with fire. My second one was kind of my fallback plan. So this one's, I'll just throw it out there. I think Quentin Tarantino is the most overrated film director working today.
Oh, I know that Jake's not going to think that's very hot.
Yeah. Cause Jake agrees with me.
Yeah, I think Tarantino is, I think he's like,
garbage.
He's not garbage. Like, he's a good director. I just think he's revered in a way that isn't earned.
I think that his best work is behind him and seems to be staying that way.
Well, considering that he's only making like, is it two or three?
I don't remember.
I don't know.
Because he only plans on making 10 films total. So he only has, I think, two or three films ahead of him.
I would say I think he's the best ripoff artist of all time.
Yeah. Gosh, man, no kidding. That's where it's like, okay, what's the line between, you know, ripping somebody off and paying homage?
Yeah, that's why I think he's overrated. So,
yeah.
Cam, for me, that's like a bell pepper.
I think it's like a...
It's not even spicy.
Just because I think 100% agree with you.
That's pimento cheese.
I think it's cayenne, and then I do think he is overrated. I like him more than you guys. I think that there are other people who are, maybe not much, but more overrated, like James Cameron. So to me, this is a cayenne.
I completely disagree, and I would like to fight.
I also think that, you know, if we're Steven Spielberg is now overrated because of his last 15 years, as we talked about recently. So, I mean, I say that kind of jokingly, but yeah, it's like cayenne for me. It's kind of hot, but not crazy.
All right.
Okay. All right. So if I'm taking all six takes, the hottest take tonight for me, as much as, oh my gosh, my computer auto-corrected Saoirse Ronan to Satire's Ronan. the hottest take would be that Satire's Ronan is the best actress working today, if I'm being honest. So, because I can't vote for any of my own, my vote's for Trevor's Saoirse Ronan pick.
I would agree with that.
Wait, what was Jake's first take? Oh yeah.
Anybody could have made The Matrix.
Okay. I think the hottest was probably the Pirates of the Caribbean from Jake, but I know that I'm not going to win my vote, or I am going to win. I don't know, whatever, but that's my vote.
The Saoirse Ronan versus Up.
Look, that uptake is very, very hot.
Man, it's not a good movie.
The Up, see, like, the Saoirse Ronan is at least, like, to me, you could consume, like, six of her movies in a week and be like, oh, yeah, that might be true. But the Up one is just Cars exists.
Up is not good.
I'm saying this as somebody who loves Up. That's a pretty, pretty hot take.
I agree that it's overrated, but I don't think it's bad.
It's not good, but that's just my thought. So
I think the Up take is hotter for me.
Okay.
Yeah. So Up continues to win, and moves on to the next hot takes.
Okay, so Trevor and I are going to talk about Sorry to Bother You, which was our film this week. Sorry to Bother You is directed by first-time filmmaker, writer, director, producer Boots Riley, who had a 20-year career in the rap game, and then stars Lakeith Stanfield, Tessa Thompson, Jermaine Fowler, Terry Crews, and then some voice work by Patton Oswalt, David Cross, and Steve Buscemi, Danny Glover's in this, Armie Hammer's in this. This is a weird film. And I think I'll just acknowledge the elephant in the room for this review. We're two white guys that live in Texas. And I would love for us to get some different voices, genders and races included. And I think that's something that we need to be better about. But this is definitely a, like, quote, black film, I think. But what I love about this is that it transcends that. There's something here for everybody. And so, Trevor, what are your general thoughts about Sorry to Bother You?
Yeah, that's kind of where I'll start. I mean, this film seems like it's going to be about race, and then it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It is on some levels, but it's so much more. This film, so if you've seen the trailer, you know, I was expecting something just crazy and off the wall, and I got something even more crazy and off the wall than what I ever could have expected.
Yeah.
It's like a different genre than I thought it was.
This is not like the trailers are really the first like 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. And this is a great film. I've never seen anything like this. I think that Boots Riley is an original and a completely unique voice and telling a unique story. This is why we need people making films who have never made films before, mm-hmm. because all kinds of people have talent and have stories to tell. This is great. I mean, we'll definitely dig into it. It's a beautiful satire. One of the great works of satire of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like that's too insane for me to say. This is interesting. It simultaneously offers a glimpse into a world that I have no familiarity with at all, but it completely intersects with a world that I am like terrifyingly familiar with.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting look into these things. It's incredibly well acted. It could use some cleaning up technically here and there.
Yeah.
But all in all, I think this is a great film, a film that needs to be seen by literally everyone. So if you were interested in this at all, please, please, please go see it. I feel like I can't say too much more without really getting into some crazy, insane spoilers.
Yeah, like this movie's, you can't talk about this movie without spoiling it. And so I'll just give my quick thoughts and then we can just move into spoilers. I absolutely agree, Trevor. I think that this movie is incredibly ambitious. It's really funny. It's fantastic satire. I think it's some of the best satire to come out in a really long time. It's one of the most original films I've seen in a really long time. It's messy. It's weird. It's riveting. It kind of blew me away in a way that like no film has, because I agree with you. It is kind of messy. Technically, it's a little bit messy story wise. But it's just like so, it's just so weird, but also just like works so well, though it shouldn't. I have so many thoughts about this film that I'm having difficulty put into words. And so, yeah, everybody go see this movie. Like, there is something for everybody here. This is definitely not a family friendly movie. So please, dear God, do definitely not take not. Your children to go see this movie.
No.
But yeah, man,
it's rated R for a reason.
Absolutely.
It earned its R rating.
Absolutely. But yeah, so we're going to hop into spoilers because we kind of have to talk about more than like the first 10 minutes of this movie. And I don't even really know where to start. I think I'll just kind of quickly give maybe the synopsis and we'll go from there. So what this movie is about a character named Cassius Green. Ha, get the name. Cash is Green. Amazing. And so basically, he discovers that he has this like magic key to success with his white voice. And so he's working as a telemarketer and like a phone bank basically. And as his career starts to take off, his friends and coworkers are trying to organize a protest against this like ridiculous corporate oppression. And basically Cassius falls under the spell of Steve Lift, who is Armie Hammer, in an incredible performance as Steve Lift, the CEO. And only like kind of the summary of what happens. And then there's this just like ridiculous twist at the end that we'll talk about in a little bit. But let's just talk about first, like, what do you think this movie is saying, Trevor?
So this movie, like I kind of said, It looks like when you see the trailer, when it starts, you think it's going to be a film about race.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually a film about capitalism and the exploitation of the working class.
Mm.
Which is great because it seems like as a society, it's this situation has happened where we expect great films by great black filmmakers to be about race. And I think a lot of that is that maybe films by black filmmakers need to be about race in order to get made.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think, you know, like like of the last few years, there's Moonlight, there's Selma, there's 12 Years a Slave, there's Black Panther. Those are all movies by great filmmakers who are black, and they're films that are at their core about race.
Yeah.
So I love that this is something where, I mean, it's not necessarily a big budget movie, but it's great for me as someone who is a white person with a completely different experience to see this kind of story told by someone who has a completely different life experience than me.
Yeah.
And I think that's why this works so well for me is that there's no possible way I could have made any kind of a movie like this.
Yeah.
The way that it approaches the characters, the way that it approaches, I mean, it's about racial relations between blacks and whites. It's about capitalism working towards exploitation of the working class. It's about the selling of people. It's about no one who's important, quote unquote, like politicians caring about whether people that are rich are doing bad things because they're getting rich also. It just, it, it illuminates all of these different things while doing it in a completely ridiculous way.
Yeah.
And I hate to reduce this film to this because it's so much better, but this is basically like the best possible episode of South Park that you could ever imagine.
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah.
But like immensely better. This is basically a cartoon. This film is.
It is. This is.
Sorry, I kind of went on for a while.
No. I'm still trying to process my thoughts on this movie. I think this is the best example of what good satire can do. This is like SNL on steroids, but it's not like trying to be funny. It just is funny because it's true. And that's what's scary is like, this could happen in like 10 years. Like, yes, this is an exaggeration, but it also has such a nugget of truth in it that while you're laughing, you're also thinking, oh no. Like, oh, yeah, like this is actually happening. We're actually exploiting people for their entire days and barely paying them. We are actually, as a white culture, exploiting a black culture. We are taking advantage of people for convenience sake. It's about our modern entertainment and media consumption habits and how we just ignore what is true and basically sedate ourselves with things that are ridiculous. The most popular show in this world is called what is it? Get the Shit Kicked Out of Me? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I got the shit kicked out of
me. Yeah, and it's literally somebody gets the shit kicked out of them, and then they get dunked in a tank full of shit. Like,
well, and it's also like shown, or it's pretty implicit that, or I guess I should say explicit if it's pretty implicit, but that it's not like the regular working class people that are the ones watching this TV show.
No, because they're too busy.
It's like
working.
It's the middle upper class people that watch this garbage to entertain themselves.
Yeah. This movie just says so much. It says so many things. And what's simultaneously for me really interesting and also really frustrating is that this movie feels like a lot of just like ideas thrown at the wall, and a lot of them stick, but I really wish that we delved a little bit more into some of them. Like, I wish we got to see more of the left eye, of the like rebellion group. And, I wish we got to see, maybe like within a worry-free facility, or I was kind of expecting, we are in spoilers, so I'll go ahead and say it. I was kind of expecting them to delve more into like, corporate, buyouts or like synergy of like, I was expecting the shows to be owned by worry-free, which is owned by the CEO. And, it's actually this big corrupt conspiracy basically. It's not really a complaint of more of just like when you throw that many things at the wall, I feel like there has to be something to link a lot of them. And I understand that the link of a lot of them is where Cassius is in his life. I think that just kind of shows that like this is Boots Riley's first script. That's really my only complaint about the script, because so much of the rest of the script is so smart.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised if this got a Best Original Screenplay nomination.
I want to read the screenplay so bad, because like everything that's happening visually, story-wise, is just insane. It's insane.
Right. Yeah, it definitely, I think it's a really good script that could have been a great script with a little more experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it necessarily takes away from what the film is trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, the only notch higher this film could have gone for me was like all-time great status. It's not quite there, but I think that this does exactly what Boots Riley wanted it to do.
Absolutely. I do wish that we got more of the phone call stuff, just because like that was so clever. And I feel like it could have been such a great way to use more satire of like what's currently happening in the world. to have his character drop in on people in the middle of their day.
Right.
And like the visual behind that was just so cool, so unique. I think like technically the cinematography was pretty good, but conceptually the cinematography was fantastic. Yeah. As well as the production design. I definitely want to, we've praised this film. I think we'll come back to praising this film in a little bit, but what bothered you about it? Like, you mentioned some technical aspects that you wish were better.
Yeah. I think that you can speak to sound a lot better than I can. The sound was a little weird in some places. I don't mean the voiceovers, because I think those were really well done.
Mm-hmm.
The sound was a little weird. I think there's a couple bad edits in this film.
Yeah.
A few bad cuts that I did not like, and especially bad cuts with syncing audio and video. There were a couple times that were a little bit iffy for me on that.
Yeah.
Cinematography was, I don't think it was amazing or astounding. I think it was good for what the story needed. But yeah, I don't think it's as crisp as it could have been.
I agree. I think with everything you said, I think it just shows to the budget of this film, as well as this being Boot Riley's first take on a film, which, like, if my first feature film is this good, my God.
Would you make any more? Would you just quit making them?
I don't know, man. He has such a fresh voice, but it also makes me wonder, like, is this what he has to say? You know, is this his Citizen right. Kane kind of thing?
Right. I mean, that's not a problem.
No, it's not. But it is exciting. So what did you think about, like, the whole, like, white voice concept? Like, how did that work for you technically, and also, like, story wise, conceptually, as a white person? How did you take that?
Yeah, that's something that's intrigued me ever since. I believe early on in Chappelle's Show, Dave Chappelle does a sketch.
Oh man, he's always doing a white voice and it's hilarious.
Right. There's one particular, I can't remember exactly, but Dave Chappelle's white voice is the first time I really kind of thought about this concept. But growing up, I just remember hearing all these people, like, when an African American person sounds like that, you hear these people say, oh, they're so articulate.
Yes.
They're so well spoken.
Yeah.
And it happens especially with, like, athletes, when you hear them doing their interviews. And when they talk like that, like more like a traditional white person would sound, you hear they get this praise for being so intelligent and how good of a communicator they are. And growing up in that kind of culture, and then plus hearing the Dave Chappelle thing, is just kind of hearing this idea of it, like, Chappelle doing the white voice just, like, shows the absurdity of what many negative racial relations are based on.
Mm-hmm.
It's these incredibly ridiculous, superficial things. And I think that this film does a good job of highlighting it in a pretty hilarious and relatable way.
Yeah. I 100% agree. And the performers that did the ADR on that were fantastic. We had, yeah.
I can't imagine better people than David Cross and Patton Oswalt.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that. Steve Buscemi too. That was who did right. Danny Glover's voice. Yeah, those, it was just so funny. So what did you think about, this is something that I thought was interesting. I can't even say his name because we don't know it, but the guy with the eye patch with his name constantly being bleeped out. Okay, what was that about?
So that's one of those things you were talking about, just throwing a bunch of stuff against the wall. I love that in a film that has, like, relatively filthy language, that they decided that whatever this guy's name is something that needed to be bleeped out, and it's never explained. Mm. I think that's really funny.
Yeah. I took that. So I think for me,
at first I was very confused. I was like, what? Yeah. Wait a second.
So
someone just said the F word in the same sentence. What's going on?
Yeah, it was funny. I was very confused. So I think for me, this, what this movie is about the most is identity. And I think that bleeping out his name is showing that he has lost his identity to fit in this world.
Uh-huh.
And sure. I think so much about this film is
right.
identity.
And there's a lot of little things that indicate that about that character
yeah.
as well.
I think also like in the secondary characters of Tessa Thompson and Steve Ewan, both who do incredible in this film, I think their characters also point to the theme of identity. Of how Tessa Thompson's character Detroit is all about being like an artist and being real and authentic, but then like at her art gallery show, she's putting on this weird like British accent, like what?
Uh-huh.
And yeah. then like Steve Ewan's character, who's all about like being authentic and stick it to the man and blah blah blah. But like that's his identity, is like he's the protest guy.
Yeah, he's like a serial. He's the serial protest
yeah.
guy.
And and Cash is his identity is wrapped up in like providing, basically. And by that being his identity, he loses his identity of who he is as a man and who he is as a
right.
black man in Oakland.
Right.
Yeah,
well, and you could say that at the beginning of the film, he's like the realest person that there
yeah.
is.
He's talking about all this existential stuff of like the sun exploding
right.
and
right. He doesn't have like a not necessarily a crutch, but he doesn't have his identity tied up in what he does, mm-hmm. partially because he doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
But I think this film is kind of the curve of him losing himself and finding himself again.
Yeah,
I also think the hilarious thing about the Detroit art show is that she touches on several themes worthy of an entire film, and they're just like a throwaway.
Yeah. And what was the film that she was quoting? That was so weird.
Oh, I can't remember, but it was
that whole scene was so weird.
Let's talk about Tessa Thompson for a quick second, who is just on fire like nobody's business right
yeah.
now. She's the newest entry in the Joaquin Phoenix Club of the didn't even recognize them until I saw the credits.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was like, who is that? And I saw the credits and I was like, what? Tessa Thompson?
Yeah,
she's great.
She's had a really good year, and I think that she is definitely someone to watch. This movie, Thor Ragnarok, and Creed 2, I think are going to prove that.
Annihilation
as well. I forgot she was in an Annihilation.
Yeah, completely different kind of character.
Yeah, she is a chameleon for sure, and she was fantastic in this film. Okay, so we got to talk about the twist. So,
oh my gosh,
the twist is that Cassius Green is working for Armie Hammer's character, Steve Lift, who's the CEO of this big, basically tech company. He's basically a parody of Jeff Bezos. And they are running a company called Worry Free. And it's people sign up for basically slavery for the rest of their life to be taken care of with bills and housing and everything. And
It's like corporate communism,
yeah,
sort of, but also sort of like slavery.
Indentured servitude, maybe. What happens is Armie Hammer's character wants Cassius to be like the salesman for this new idea that he has. And Cassius is like, okay, cool. We'll watch the video. I love the fact that they made like a full legit claymation short film as the video, as the pitch video.
That was so good.
Was, like,
that was
well
so
done,
good.
Which was amazing. But Cassius is like, hey, can we hold on? I got to go to the bathroom. Goes to the bathroom. In the bathroom, he discovers
the wrong bathroom.
The wrong bathroom. He went in the olive door. He was supposed to go in the jade door. So funny. He discovers that Armie Hammer's character is making half horse, half human creatures to be more effective slave laborers. And
so is this the longest you've ever watched a dystopian sci-fi without realizing that it was?
I think it might have been. I think this is also the most like, what the heck is happening? I've had in a movie in a really long time of like, I don't think a film has ever shifted gears that hard and that fast.
Yeah, that's like Shyamalan level twist.
And it like,
I mean,
and the weird thing and I think, is it works.
Like, total props to Armie Hammer, who sells the hell out of this thing. That's how, like, I think if that performance is lesser, that part of the film doesn't work.
Absolutely.
And he approaches it so matter-of-factly that it's like absurdist, yeah, almost, which is intentional, definitely.
And he's such a good actor. He's so underrated.
Yeah. But yeah, I figured that it was some kind of weird science experiment. Once the guy was in the bathroom, like saying, "Can you help me?" That whole deal. But this is not what I expected.
No. And the other twist is that while he's talking with Steve Lift, Armie Hammer's character, he snorts some high quality cocaine to later find out that that's actually the change agent that causes people to turn into the horse people. And so at the end of the film, everything is happy. Everyone is doing well. And then you find out that Cassius Green is a horse person now. yeah.
And is mad about it.
Yeah. I don't even really know how to steer a conversation about the last like 20 minutes of this film.
So the idea of this kind of manufactured civil rights leader.
Oh man.
Is terrifying, to be honest with you.
So Armie Hammer's character offers Cassius Green $100 million to become a horse person for 5 years and basically act as the MLK of the horse people to falsely give them hope and to keep them calm as a group for 5 years. And so, it's insane.
I think this idea is really key to the ultimate theme of this film, I think. I think that this ultimately is a film that is a satire. It's pointing out problems. But it ultimately has a pessimistic and a cynical view on social change.
Elaborate on that.
I think this very depressing idea of Martin Luther King, universal champion for civil rights, for equal treatment. I mean, everyone knows MLK, but the idea that even supposed great social change that could come within the ranks of these horse people, Equisapiens, that it's manufactured by their creators. And I think I think Boots Riley is saying that we can't really trust anyone because we don't know what's behind it. And I think what he's trying to say is all we have for each other.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. That
like we can't rely on anything bigger than us, anything outside of us. That it's just, I mean, us being you and your group of people or whatever, but we have to look out for each other because nobody else is looking out for us, even though it may seem like they are.
Yeah. I never really like, I hadn't thought through that concept yet, but I think it's like almost a commentary on something like Citizens United, of like the dark money that's in politics right now. And like, you have no idea who you're actually electing to represent you.
Right. And we see that when Cash makes that video public and no one cares.
And I think,
which is not unbelievable.
No. And Steve Ewan has a fantastic quote in this film. He says, When problems are so absurd and they're beyond solving, people just accept them as the new normal. And I think that's like a fantastic way to sum up the world right now.
Yeah.
Man, this was a heavy one. This was a good conversation based on this film.
This is ultimately a pessimistic film for how funny it is.
Yeah, it really is.
In some ways.
I think the best compliment we can say about this movie is that it's starting conversations like these. I think this is one of my favorite conversations that we've had on Popcorn Optional, just because of all of the roads this film can take you down. And so, Trevor, before we get to ratings, I have a question for you. Does this make you question like your life choices or habits? Like, are you going to keep using Amazon?
Man, I mean, I guess I wish I was a better person and it did. I think that it does make me more cautious about some things. Mm-hmm. But just that, I guess I'm just not quite strong enough for it to really make a huge difference. I don't know what it's going to take for me, but I think that being aware of this is somewhat good, but I'm still not as changed by it as I should be.
Yeah. And I think that's what this film sets out to do, is just kind of like start the conversation. It definitely has opened my eyes to, just my habits, my spending habits, my media consumption habits, and just the world around us, and that, you know, Elon Musk might be the one to save our energy issues, but he also is kind of a huge jerk, you know? So
he has the political views of a 15-year-old on Reddit.
Yeah, so like, yeah, this, and same with Jeff Bezos, all those guys you look up to, or we look up to, or politicians or whatever. And also just like, don't lose yourself to be successful, because then you actually lose yourself and you turn into a horse person. I think that's what this film sums up. So cool.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Know? There it is. Any other thoughts?
No, I mean, I think we pretty much hit everything. This is a great film.
Yeah.
What would you
rate it as?
I'm gonna give this $95 million out of $100 million.
Nice.
This is an A for me. I think it could have been. This is a weird complaint. This could have been like a transcendent all time movie, but instead it's just a great movie. which I mean is like nitpicking of all time, but I loved this. It's fantastic. One of the best films I've seen this year.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you, Trevor. I think this conversation has raised my rating up pretty significantly, because I was just kind of confused after seeing it, but actually talking through it,
sure.
I feel pretty strongly now that I think that this is, you know, I agree it's not technically the strongest film, and I think some of the technical issues do hold it back from being one of the greats, like you said. I do think this is by far some of the best satire we've gotten. I think this is one of the most important movies of the year. I think everybody should see this movie. And also I would just add to that, like, if you do see this movie and you are for some reason offended, or you have a feeling of like anger or discomfort, there's a reason for that, and maybe just kind of wonder why it's making you uncomfortable instead of just getting angry that it's making you uncomfortable. Because this movie makes you ask a lot of questions, which is, I think, what movies are supposed to do. And so I agree with you, Trevor. For me, this is an A. It could have been an A+, which leaves me slightly disappointed. But overall, a fantastic film. And I think it's going to be one of the standouts of the year. That is our review for Sorry to Bother You. We'll get Cam back on here and finish out the episode.
That's all we have for our review this week. Let's go ahead and get to our content of the week. Jake, what is your content of the week?
Yeah, so I have something that I don't think we've ever recommended before, an application, an iPhone app. This is an app called Wilson. And if you like magazines or like zines or like a curated thing, Wilson is basically a magazine for podcasts. And so I think on a weekly basis, they take a topic and create like a zine out of podcasts for it, with like custom artwork. And it's really cool. I really like the idea. It's only been around for a few months, so there's only like 6 issues, but I would highly recommend checking out the app Wilson. And then also there's new Childish Gambino music, and we're huge fans of Donald Glover here and Childish Gambino, so check out the summertime what was it called? The summer pack, something like that.
Summertime pack?
I don't remember. It's his new EP about summer, and it's fantastic.
Listen to all of the Childish Gambino, just find it.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Trevor,
I'm going to do 2 things. One, I'm going to recommend that you go eat some meatloaf, because I had it for dinner. It's really good. So there's our first.
Is that the first?
Our first food.
The first food?
Food recommendation. So there's
okay.
Your content of the week is give meatloaf a chance. It's really underrated.
And he's talking about the singer, not the food.
Well, actually, both at the same time.
Oh god. Hot take: meatloaf's the best part of Fight Club.
Oh, well, wow.
I mean, Meatloaf is, in my opinion, supremely talented as a movie.
Okay, back to recommends.
Anything else?
Back to the recommends.
My other recommendation is a history book. So I just started reading A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. If you are at all interested in the history of the United States, where the United States is as a country, what the American experience is like, if you're one of those people that is searching for the great American novel like all the rest of us, you should check out A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. So just to kind of, basically what it is, he gives history from the point of view of America's women, factory workers, African Americans, Native Americans, working poor, and immigrant laborers. This is not the history of America as viewed by the elite, rich statesmen, those who were in power, but by those who are lesser, the lower class, the true, you know, people that make up this nation. And I'm reading it, and it is really interesting. It's a great perspective, one that you don't hear in history class. It gives you a whole new way to look at the events of the past.
Hmm. Wow, cool. All right, for my content of the week, I have a couple things. First up, really quick, 2 films celebrating anniversaries this week. The Dark Knight was released 10 years ago tomorrow, Wednesday, July 18th. So
Ooh.
That's insane. That makes me feel really old. That's been 10 years. And then Die Hard, 30th anniversary this week. So I don't care what Bruce Willis said on his roast. It is a Christmas movie. And you're the worst.
And then, Alan Rickman rest in peace.
Yes. Mm. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's going to be done.
Sorry.
Okay, and then two actual content of the week recommends. I watched a movie on Netflix this week called Set It Up, starring Glenn Powell and Zoe Dutch. I don't know how you say her last name. Also starring Taye Diggs and Lucy Liu. It's a romantic comedy, and it is hysterical and is well worth your time. It's fantastic. Just go Set It Up. Thank me later. Well worth your time. Very good. And then, okay, so I've been doing this thing where I'm trying to clear out my watch lists on all the streaming platforms I have. Netflix, Amazon Prime, whatever. I'm just trying to watch whatever's in my watch list so that I can have clear watch lists. I don't know why. And I recently watched a film called Get Smart, which is based on actually one of my dad's favorite TV shows from back in the day. And it stars the great Steve Carell, Anne Hathaway, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And
I forgot.
It is
Rock
a full movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's small in it. I say that like he's still big, but he's small, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, at that point. Like he's a pebble. He's not full rock yet.
Yeah, man.
But that
I saw this movie in theaters. It's been a long time.
Okay. It is a full movie of Threat Level Midnight. I'm not kidding.
Yes, please.
Yeah, it is. It's so great. There's so much charisma on the screen all the time. Ugh.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I was watching it rolling, thinking of it like from an office perspective of Steve Carell really made a full hour and a half long Threat Level Midnight.
That's brilliant.
And so if you're a fan of The Office, that's Get Smart. I think it's on streaming on either Netflix or on Amazon Prime.
It's on Netflix right now. It started popping up on my recommend.
Yeah, go watch it. It's well worth your time. It's very funny, especially for fans of The Office. All right, well, that's all we have for this week's episode. We'll be back next week with a new episode and a review of something new. If you want to know more about us, you can go to our website at popcornoptional.com, where you can find all of our episodes. If you want to interact with us, you can find us on Twitter at Popcorn Optional or like us on Facebook at Popcorn Optional. My name is Cameron Slanina. You can find me online at 321 Kimi Time.
You can find me at jakebrown.tv. That's my website and my Instagram. Trevor?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
All right, until next time, we hope you have a great week. Watch some movies, and in the words of the great Michael Scott, we'll be back ASAP as possible.
Bye.
Later.